LMT is a lens by which you assess all economic understanding.
Wall Street is full of corruption. It is baked in to every aspect of our society.
1900s, Lenin was predicting global finance capital would do all the things it's doing today. This is written over 100 years ago.
All right, everybody. It is Steve, the Rogue Scholar. Good to see all four of you here today. Wow, man. YouTube is doing one hell of a shit job on blocking us algorithmically, aren't they? We have almost 14,000 subscribers and we have four people here. Guys, thank you for being the four that showed. Five. Wow, we're up to five now. Good deal. All right. So, folks, you know, one of the biggest things that we hear about within our space is, you know, hey, you know, we can do these state-based programs. We've talked so much about this, and I tried to explain some stuff to people back during the heat of the healthcare stuff, and for whatever reason, you know, macroeconomically illiterate people tend to take it personally when you explain the way things work. But last night, watching John Fetterman in his debate, okay, showed us, number one, how important it is to understand that there is a real draw toward really, really bad behavior when states don't have enough funding, when they can't find a way to fund the programs that they need. John Fetterman, who stumbled all over the place recovering from a stroke, spent all his time trying to defend himself about fracking. Fact of the matter is that he was like pro-fracking, not pro-fracking. Savage Joy had him on a few years back on RP. It's weird. Just a quick note of Ben here. No one, not CNN, not anybody else, bothered to mention the organization. Like if CNN reported, it didn't show anything. It wasn't like, you know, our channel got any notoriety. And I don't really care, but it's just typical. This organization is always the mystery organization behind my show and my this and my that. It's, you know, but RP exists. Let me just say that for the record, folks. RP does exist and has housed many people getting their start in alternative media and has even kept me going for almost 10 years. So I hate that we don't get any kind of cred. We don't get any kind of publicity. We don't get any kind of props, but fuck them all, right? Fuck them all and fucking no regrets. Anyway, the reason why this is a big deal, I was just stumbling along trying to understand more about the military-industrial complex, trying to understand funding, because apparently, you know, once again, we're looking at the military getting a huge amount of funding, billions upon billions of dollars of funding, guaranteed funding for our 800-plus military bases around the world, plus all of our excursions, you name it, $800 billion. We're begging for healthcare. We're carrying copays and we're doing all. And people always say, well, how come there's always money for war and not money for, you know, regular people? And that got me thinking back to John Fetterman, who was talking about fracking and how he's for fracking. I live in the state of Pennsylvania. John Fetterman would have been my senator had he, you know, not stumbled last night. And it's not over yet, but it doesn't look good. It was a really, really cringeworthy experience. He should not have agreed to that. I know it would have probably hurt him either way. He was screwed either way, but going up on that stage and stumbling the way he did, that put a fork in people that were undecided, unfortunately. So I would not expect Fetterman to make it out of this. Right, wrong, or different. I know we, you know, progressives don't like him because he's about fracking, and that's why we're going to talk about what we're going to talk about today. So let me just show you this. This right here is from the Department of Defense. And why does this matter? I want you to think about this. If the military-industrial complex, if the military-industrial complex is, you know, we got to cut it, we got to do this, we got to do that, on and on and on and on and on, right? We got to do all these things to cut the military. And I don't disagree with you. I do not disagree with you that we should cut the military. What I want you to understand, real quick, Fetterman, it wasn't just that he performed poorly in the debate. It was that he couldn't speak. He was stumbling. He was slurring. He was blending his words together. It was one of the worst performances ever. It was almost like that time when Ron Paul
had the Bell's palsy right in the middle of a broadcast almost. It was just really horrible. Okay. But in any event, because of what we call military Keynesianism, the military is the primary way that our current Congress, and not just our current Congress, but many, many Congresses and many, many administrations have used to keep the economy going. And as part of that, one of the most important things that they do, and I, if you check the tape, folks, I have years of saying what I'm about to say, but I'm going to put it with data today. Instead of just me knowing it off the top of my head, I'm going to take you guys through this. Okay. This is really the way the military industrial complex latches into communities and makes them 100% dependent on military spending. Okay. So here we go. Watch this. Now, this is talking, this just came out on the 20th. So 6 days ago, and this is looking back at last year. So no matter when you read this, this would be valid because it's last year's report. They don't have this year's report. This is from the U.S. Department of Defense. Now, I'm not going to get into off the books, on the books, but I'm not getting into any of that. That's not what this is about. This is an MMT, Modern Monetary Theory discussion on spending and how they do it and why we're in this kind of situation we are with our military, okay? So just read this. It says, today, the Department of Defense's Office of Local Defense Community Cooperation released its fiscal year 2021 defense spending by state report to help states and communities better understand the components of defense spending on procurement and personnel. The report's graphs, maps, tables represent a range of findings, such as total spending, figures, categories, contracted goods, services, major defense vendors, number of types of defense personnel. This snapshot provides the public and private leaders with a starting place to assess how military investment across installations and the private sector can be optimized by supporting regional innovation, industrial capability and capacity, supply chain resilience, and cultivating a skilled workforce. So let me just stop right there. Okay, we're going to come back to this. We're going to stop for just a second. So understand that they're combining the military industrial complex with our training, education, and development and community uplift and reinvigorating the community, you name it, right? I mean, jobs and tax revenue into the state, okay? That's what this is about. I want you to understand. Why does it matter? Because states, they don't create their currency. They only get money if big business comes through and does its due. And so we already know, those of us who are not wedded to trying to do bold policy changes at the state level, those of us who understand this stuff, this won't be a shocker. For those of you who simply are incapable of understanding this kind of thing, I'm hoping that this will help you out. I'm hoping this will help you out. All right. So let's get back to it. So when you look at this, it says, understanding the depth and reach of our contract spending is essential as we strive to strengthen our defense industrial base, said William LaPlante, Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition and Sustainment. The Department of Defense requires resilient, diverse, and secure supply chains to limit vulnerabilities and ensure the development and sustainment of critical capabilities. This report is a great tool our state and local partners should use to better understand and strengthen supply chains in their regions, which are essential to national security, economic security, and our technological competitiveness and innovation. Defense spending fell in the fiscal year 2021. Interesting, huh? Department of Defense contract obligations and payroll spending in the 50 states and District of Columbia decreased by $34.9 billion or 5.6% over the prior year. This was the product of a 9.2% decrease in DOD contract obligations, personnel spending in the 50 states and the District of Columbia, however, increased by 3.5%. DOD contract obligations and payroll spending in the 50 states and District of Columbia totaled $559 billion, which is 2.3% of the country's gross domestic product, GDP. If the total spending were divided across every U.S. resident, it would amount to $1,684 per U.S. citizen. Of those funds, $398.7 billion, 71%, were spent on contracts for products and services, while the remaining $160.3 billion, 29%, paid the salaries of DOD personnel. Virginia, California, and Texas topped the list of recipients for overall defense spending. However, Virginia, Hawaii, and the District of Columbia ranked highest when considering defense spending impacts on their respective states' GDP. Now, let's stop right there before I do the big reveal. Let's go ahead and stop for just a second. When you think about what I'm about to show you, imagine what would happen if we simply cut military spending. And I am all for ending wars. I'm all for just eliminating 9/10 of our military, right? I don't believe in war under any circumstances. I believe that we need to be a good citizen, global citizen. I do recognize geopolitical stuff has people that have different angles and goals. And it's up to the U.S. and other states to find ways to allow other people to make decisions for themselves and then find replacements and alternatives within their sphere rather than creating wars. Okay. But this is going to blow your mind. So let me show you this. Let me get that up. So when you start looking at this, Virginia, number one, has $62.7 billion spent into the state of Virginia for military. California, right on the heels of it, $57.4 billion of federal money going to the military-industrial complex contractors in the state of California, $47.3 billion inside of the state of Texas, $30.9 billion in New York, $30.1 billion in Florida, $26.3 billion in Maryland, $21.3 billion for Massachusetts, $19.3 billion for Connecticut, $19.1 billion for Washington. Now, I'm not sure if that's state or if that's the city of Washington, District of Columbia. I'm going to assume that that's Washington state. And then Pennsylvania is 16.5. Now, you will notice, with the lone exception of Maryland, And Massachusetts, Connecticut, right here, the rest of these are very, very large states with large electoral impact, okay? There's a electoral reason why these guys rank in the top five. Now, let's just be fair. Maryland's part of the DMV, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia, okay? And then, you know, these others, Massachusetts and Connecticut, are northeast coastal regions, probably have a lot of reasons for, accessing military dollars as well. But as you go through this, you just realize the Washington state, huge state, Pennsylvania, huge state. And then it goes through here and it tells you which defense contractors receive the most money. Number one, Lockheed Martin. $39.2 billion. Boeing, $23.6 billion. Raytheon, $21.4 billion. General Dynamics, $16.9 billion. Northrop Grumman, $15.0 billion. Here you go. Love this one. Pfizer, $13.3 billion. Layer 3, L3 Harris Technologies. I forgot it's level 3 emerged with Harris years ago. Anyway, $7.5 billion. Humana, $7.1 billion. Huntington Ingalls, $7 billion. And Moderna, Pfizer, Moderna, $6.9 billion. Eight of the 10 companies were on the list for fiscal year 2020. Pfizer and Moderna were both new to the list and are anomalies for traditional defense spending. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to get out of this momentarily. I want you to understand this. if you believe that the way the society and the way the country are funded is by banks, you're an idiot. That's not how it's done. Sorry, I'm just going to call a spade a spade. Federal government is how it gets spent, okay? So this is an MMT case study. Once again, the federal government spends that money. And the process is like this. Congress passes one of these big federal funding bills. $840 billion, $900 billion, a trillion, whatever it is they spend. That's the budget, right? And it's based on these contracts that they put out there to these different groups, right? I mean, we're talking about these guys right here. And there's others, of course, too, right? There are others, of course, as well. But if you think about this, right, what happens if I cut the state spending in these states right here? What happens if I cut the spending to the defense? Virginia, California, all these states, every single one of them, they all, and I'm going to show you one more screen here in a second. Give me 1 minute to pull it up so you all can better appreciate this. I'm going to share my screen, a different screen this time. So give me one quick second, stop sharing and then resharing. So get back in here. Now, if you understand the stuff that I talk about with race to the bottom, you understand every state's fiscal position is different. Look at California. California has 71% of its pensions funded. It's got 39.3 days of rainy day fund. And they've got tons of unfunded federal mandates that put their public pensions at risk, you name it. All kinds of stuff that's put down on the Fed. They've got almost 150,000 homeless people in California. Go up here to Washington State. Washington State, a little bit different, has 94% pensions funded. They have 25.4 day rainy day fund. And their homeless population is 21,577. Come on down here to Virginia. Virginia has a homeless population of nearly 6,000, pensions funded nearly 80%, and rainy day fund of 17.6%. Okay. And if I go over here to Maryland, which is a little hard to get to, they have 6,500 homeless folks, pensions funded 70.4, and they've got about 22 days of rainy day fund should they run out of money. Let's look at Florida real quick. Rainy day fund, 16.7 days, pensions funded nearly 80%, homeless population 28. And I guess for good measure, let's look at Pennsylvania, which has got 13,000 homeless population. Look at the pension fund. They've only got 54.8% of their pensions funded. They only have a rainy day fund of 3.6 days. And if you look at this, I don't know if you see that or not, but it says fracking funding schools. Okay. Now I'm going to go ahead and stop sharing this screen, and I'm going to go ahead and share that screen now. Give me 1 second. When you understand this, this is going to help you understand John Fetterman too. Look at this. You see that right there? That right there is a very, very real deal right there. This is what's happening in the state of Pennsylvania. To fund schools, they want to tax fracking. So who do you think is going to fight tooth and nail to prevent us from actually stopping fracking? The state of Pennsylvania can't afford it. Their politics suck. The state I'm in sucks from a political standpoint. And worse, because they're not a currency issuer and because they're so tight at the margins, the only way a state like Pennsylvania could survive is with federal intervention, with getting rid of unfunded mandates or whatever. But instead, state of Pennsylvania is going to try to tax fracking. Get rid of you here for a second. Just like Senator Vincent Hughes unveils plan to fund schools with $8.25 billion from fracking tax. Okay. Now, mind you, what is the date on this? This is going back to December 17, 2020, but I assure you, the Marcellus Shale is very much in play. And he says, State Senator Vincent Hughes chose Cassidy Elementary in Philadelphia as the spot to unveil a new bill Thursday that would bring money to underfunded schools by taxing natural gas production. Now, see, let's talk about this for a second. Do you want schools to be unfunded? Is that it? See how this plays out? Do you want children to do without new books and great classrooms and, you know, get rid of all that, you know, mold and mildew in the old 1950s schools and get rid of some of that asbestos and stuff like that, right? And the lead paint in the walls, the kids chew on, whatever. Uh-oh. Hold on one second.
Little Camboni, you know I'm doing an interview, right? Okay, I'll be out there soon.
Kids, what are you going to do? So, with that in mind, I'm going to go back to this, and I'm going to show you, as we go through this, Hughes, a Democrat representing parts of Philadelphia and Montgomery counties, was returning a favor of sorts. Cassidy students visited the state capitol in Harrisburg on Tuesday to urge legislators to address inequity among school districts across the state. Hughes' proposed legislation would provide money to repair, upgrade schools, and ensure equitable public education for students statewide. Among several people at the school to support Hughes were state reps Morgan Cephas, a fellow Democrat from Philly, Jerry Roseman, acting director of Occupational Environmental Health and Safety for Philadelphia Federation of Teachers, the Reverend Gregory Holston, executive director of Power, and Joan Duvall Flynn, president of Pennsylvania NAACP. Now, see, let's stop right there. These are folks that normally would be our, you know, you would want to call your allies, and you certainly wouldn't want to punch down at people of color and minorities who are struggling. They certainly are desperate for help, and by any means necessary kicks in, right? They're sitting here championing this stuff because there is nobody understanding modern monetary theory, and we've got a bunch of state-by-state knuckleheads running around saying falsehoods about economics. And so as a result of their misleadership and going and getting all the headliners that don't pay attention to us, running around saying the same nonsense, wearing cute hats, doing all kinds of kooky things that don't amount to any kind of economic literacy. Okay. And then I get punched in the face by everybody. Hey, it was mean to them. No, I just care too much about all of our children to allow a lie to stand. But if you're cool with lying, you be my guest. You go out there and support liars. That's not my style. I don't do it, won't do it. And if it hurts some feelings, you know what? You got to break some eggs to make an omelet. That's the deal, folks. And I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry, right? Sorry, not sorry. There we go. So let's get back to this. And if you think about where I'm going with this, you're going to begin to understand the whole military-industrial complex thing in a second. So standing in the front of the school, Hughes was just minutes from Lower Merion, one of the wealthiest school districts in the state. The senator says schools like Lower Merion's don't suffer from the same problems as those in underfunded districts. There are two separate and distinct education systems in the state, and they are unequal, Hughes said. They are unequal because of race, which is true, and they are unequal because of income, which is equally true, because schools are funded on local tax dollars. Doesn't matter whether you think it's a good idea. Doesn't matter if you think it's a really cool idea to fund a bunch of programs at the state level. The bottom line is that because you fund it at the state level, look what happens. There are two separate and distinct education systems in this state, and they are all unequal. Hughes said they are unequal because of race, and they're unequal because of income. So Senate Bill 777, or the Emergency Education Equal Education Plan, as Hughes calls it, would cost $8.25 billion and bring underfunded school districts to equitable standards and more investment in academics. Pennsylvania ranks as having the worst funding disparity between rich and poor district in the county. $5 billion would be allocated for repairing, rebuilding, and revitalizing school districts that have been locked out of the funding. The remaining $3.25 billion would be dispersed over 5 years, $650 million per year, with $400 million going to the FAIR funding formula and $250 million going to academic programs and efforts. These include intensive grade level reading, math instruction, class size reduction, community schools, full day kindergarten, college prep, and AP classes, and career and technical courses. We're going for what is necessary to get the equality that these children and all these children of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania deserves to have, Hughes said. In addition to existing revenue sources, the money to fund the bill would come from taxing natural gas production. One of the key elements of addressing injustice is inadequate and fair funding, said Mary Filardo, executive director at the 21st Century School Fund, an advocacy organization for healthy, safe, and adequate learning environments that supports the senator's bill. Humorous, healthy, safe, but she's pushing fracking. Anyway, the 23-year-old nonprofit released a report that provides a state and national analysis of 20 years of maintenance and operation spending and capital construction investments on public school facilities. Hughes used research when creating his bill. Now, this is going to be, I'm going to provide this directly into the chat so you guys, if you're so interested, can look. Okay, there it is right there. And also I will put the DOD report into the chat real quick, even though it is in the actual, information of the actual live stream. But then on top of it, we've got this race to the bottom, which I have no idea how many of you guys actually think of Real Progressives when you think of resources to review, but here is our race to the bottom. It's on our webpage. Anyway, let's get back to this now. So using a tax on natural gas for infrastructure is spot on. Look at this. I mean, they can't help themselves. Despite numerous previous attempts and the fact that Pennsylvania is one of the country's largest producers of natural gas, it is the only state that doesn't tax its producers for their extractions. Since the natural gas boom in the state, politicians from both parties have tried to raise revenue through a tax on shale gas production to no avail. Governor Wolf is now proposing an extraction tax of 6.5%. Besides the legislative pushback, natural gas production in the state is slowing down, and the industry is under fire from environmentalists. Yay! You see fracking, the process used to produce natural gas, as a threat to local water supplies, which it is. Nevertheless, Hughes wants to use the tax to fund the bill and is confident that the industry will remain a sustainable revenue source. Anyway, goes through all this stuff and says, report released in April by Pennsylvania Independent Fiscal Office, which provides revenue projections for state budgeting, estimates that 6.5% tax would bring in $349 million in fiscal year 2017-18, increase by more than double next year, and continue to rise to $1.5 billion in 2021-2022. Anyway, you can read this. There's some interesting stuff in here. Well, no, I'll finish it. Hughes said it's time for natural gas producers to, here we go, pay your fair share and contribute to the Commonwealth. Well, they are contributing. They're poisoning the water. Don't worry, baby. They'll give you money. Don't let it go into the general fund to be spent on God knows what. He said, target your investment, your contribution to community of schools, urban and rural across the state that deserves the investment. No students were available for comment, but Hughes read copies of letters that students wrote to him last week asking for fair funding and better conditions in their school. Many of the students said that the school was always dirty and felt like a prison. No shit. If you can't take the science, if you can't take the data, if you can't take the research, if you can't take the moral argument, at the very least, take the message from the students, Hughes said. He will introduce legislation this week. And this is not really a story, if you will, about that piece of legislation. But I want you to understand, because states are underfunded in the worst way, and because states have to tax their people to stay afloat, unlike the federal government, which is absolutely 100% self-funding. Federal government creates currency. Your taxes aren't used for paying for things. They're just deleted. They're used as the need. They make the need. They create the need for the currency, right? That's why Bitcoin will never displace the dollar. That's why all these cryptocurrencies will never displace the dollar or the yen or the ruble or the UK pound or the Australian dollar. Well, it won't displace any of them. Okay. It won't. No matter how bad so many adjectives to use here. I'll just skip them. No matter how bad certain individuals would like this LOLbertarian private bullshit currency to be the thing, it ain't it. Okay. It's trash. It's stupid. It's pathetic. It's a Ponzi scheme. It's disgraceful. And those who support it, disgraceful as well. Sorry. Sorry. The truth is out there for you. Choose truth. Okay. Now, let's get back to our very important military stuff. So now you remember Pennsylvania suffering majorly and having to go to fracking, looking at fracking dollars as a way of funding schools, because in the, you know, in the words of the sponsors of the bill, okay, this is good for the kids. This is it. This is it. We've got to do this regardless of your moral outrage. At least listen to the children. Listen to the children. Okay. The kids don't know anything about. About, you know, what fracking is or does or anything else like that. And literally going back to this, it's scary. Imagine if you cut $62.7 billion out of Virginia's budget, took away that money, they didn't have it, $57 billion for California, et cetera, right? These states jockey for this. This is why they fight base closures. This is why they fight any of that stuff. It's why they fight to have the buttons on the uniforms to be built in their backyard, because they want to have all those things, all those aspects built there, because they need the revenue, okay? Now, we already see this. We already see who the bad players are. Get them back up here for a minute. Up, oh, wrong. Here you go. All your bad players, all the guys that are making war, right? Now, this is where it gets tricky. If you don't understand this, states fight with each other, literally fight with each other. I've said this so many times, I almost feel like I'm being like punked, like I'm looking around for a hidden camera, see if I'm saying this again for the millionth time because no one listens. States have to tax to survive. Companies want to go where taxes are low. So what ends up happening is groups like Texas, who has no problem eliminating any kind of tax burden on businesses coming down there.
Come on down here, man. Come on down here. We're open for business,
right? They will take a business right out of Detroit, Michigan. They will take a business right out of the old Pittsburgh. They will take a business right out of the old Buffalo. They will take a business right out of your backyard. And that will suddenly become dry well, nothing to mine out of it because the business left. And the people that were left there, they got nowhere to go. And one person's income is another person's spending, and another person's spending is another person's income. If you dry up the business, community dries up. Community has no way of paying for the services it needs to stay afloat. Now imagine if you understood what I'm saying. Really understood it. And you started proffering up a state-by-state approach to Medicare for All or something like that. You can hate me for bringing it up. And if you do, it's just a sign that you're not listening. It's a sign you hate data. I'm cool with you not liking me. Fuck, I don't like a lot of people. But I'm telling you the truth. And those that say otherwise, they're not telling you the truth, okay? Exactly. Texas isn't even maintaining its grid, right? Exactly. Why is that? Because they don't care. They don't care. See, in this state-by-state race to the bottom, states are competing with each other, and they're dropping the bottom out to make the cost so much lower for the business. Come on in. That what do you think suffers? What do you think suffers? Do you think it's maybe the schools? Do you think it's maybe public services? Do you think maybe it's the power grid? Do you think that it's simply fucking up every state in the country? Yes. So why would somebody propose a state-by-state solution to a massive spending problem when states can't create their own currency? Why do you think somebody might do that? There's like three states that could do it barely, but if there were a pandemic, they'd be fucked. They don't have the ability as a state to negotiate the kind of prices and kind of market stability that the federal government can do. And so what happens? Right-wing scum who don't want you to have healthcare to begin with are desperate for an idiot that doesn't understand economics to have a say at the table. They're desperate for the dumbo that doesn't know economics to have the seat at the table so that they can put a completely perilous idea out there so they can point and say, see, didn't work. I don't want none of that socialized medicine. But you'd have to be strapping a brain to get that part. You'd have to be understanding the way the warfare works. Unless you just think everybody's suddenly a progressive or a leftist. Let me assure you, we are surrounded by people that don't think like us. We are surrounded by people. Okay? So with that in mind, what do you do? See, to me, I think we need to have about 10 million people. And that's short. I'd love to have more than that. But let's say a million man march in DC to start things off, to get the party started. Showing up in Washington, D.C., explaining to them that we understand that you make the money, you create it every time you sign a bill, that you don't have to put this burden on the states so they eat each other alive and destroy one another in a race to the bottom. You could do that. We could do that. But alas, you would have to have people understanding that MMT is not just, hey, MMT helps us keep capitalism alive. Do you know there's some idiots that say that? I mean, seriously, there's some idiots that have the nerve to say that. It's just amazing to me that if you want to do business in the global market, you've got to have a means of a unit of account to trade in. The rest of the world is not giving up their currency and they're not giving up banking and all the other things. They're just not. Sorry. And so one of the most important things is to understand that even to get there, even if it's transitory, because nothing's forever, you only have today. You have today. We have today. And tomorrow, and we have to think long-term how these days stack on top of each other. And so if you don't understand the way currency works today because you're busy worrying about, well, I want a moneyless society, gang. What about a resource-based economy? Shit, folks, you have got literally got this going on right here. And you're going to tell me about a resource-based economy? You're going to tell me about doing away with the dollar? You're going to tell me about all that? Look, folks, I'm not making this up, folks. Look at this. I'm not making it up. We are outnumbered hugely, hugely outnumbered. Okay. We are outnumbered in the worst possible way. And we have in our own midst, we have a conglomerate of three really typical brains. One, MMT's a psyop. It just furthers capitalism. I don't understand it, but I've got opinions. And I've got proud opinions, and I'm going to make them really loud. It's a psyop. I don't understand what I'm saying, but it's a psyop. Right, that's number one. That's horrible kind, but it's one of them. The other one is, man, it's just printing money causing inflation. It's just printing money. No, that's not what MMT is, asshole. Sorry. No, it's not. But you had an opinion. You had things to say. You had things to say. But there was nothing you were saying that mattered. It was worthless. It was stupid. It was embarrassing. I wish I could have put you up on a stage and let you say it in front of people. Sadly, unfortunately.
The worst part is that probably the vast majority go, yeah, that's right, man. Cavemen say, uh-huh, yeah. Knuckle dragger, yeah. Cause inflation.
Right? And then the last bit is this small, tiny group of people desperate to make people understand that we can do all these things. That the federal government can do it. That the national debt is nothing more than the net money supply. That's it. You can't buy U.S. debt. And they buy our debt. Folks, do you understand they buy bonds? It's a savings account for rich people. That's what treasuries are. They take their already held U.S. dollars and buy a bond that gives them interest debt. By the way, the government has already accounted for. And this is a way of expanding the money supply by their interest payments. The only way to limit it, which is really irrelevant, by the way, folks, who in the world thinks that quantity theory of money is even a thing? Who in the world thinks that the Cantillon effect is real? And if you don't know what those are, look them up. It's a bunch of libertarian bullshit, okay? L-O-L-bertarian, right? Let's say it correctly. I don't want to say it wrong. Don't want to offend anyone. I didn't mean to call them libertarian. L-O-L-bertarians, right? So with that in mind, all right, with that in mind, we have to take a look and say the vast majority of the people out there that are in our midst would say we're wrong. They would tell us we're wrong. They would be wrong, but they will tell us we're wrong. And so you're not just up against the right wing. You understand what I'm saying? You're up against your own kind, your own friends, your allies. It's not divisive to be correct, but it is divisive to not know any better and to beat up the people that do. That is divisive. And it's certainly human to understand the people that do know that have been screaming for years, hey, hey, hey. And they get punched down, they get ignored, they get left off of certain shows because reasons and bullshit, right? But the fact is that as you see clearly, most of our, most of our movement is economically illiterate. That's not a cut down, that's a truth. Most of the people you and I depend on to make it so that this stuff isn't happening don't know any better. They just say, cut the military. So let's think about that for a minute. What happens if you cut the military? And by the way, thank you so much there, Mr. Man, Mr. Robbie Lake. I appreciate the super chat, $5. MMT is not just a theory. It is a fact. Thank you, Steve and Status Quo and Real Progress in Action and Real Progressives. Christian Smalls is an American hero. Fist in the air. Absolutely. Let's see. Do we have any others? All right. There's a bunch of great comments. I'm going to leave you guys to them. Anyway. Anywho, here we go. So the problem with general strikes, and I appreciate the idea of general strikes, but let me just say this right off the bat. They've passed a lot of laws, okay? They've passed a lot of laws to make strikes illegal. So that means people have to be prepared. We got a question. I'm going to answer this at the end. I already kind of answered it, but we're going to answer it in a second. The problem with general strikes is most people are not prepared for a general strike. They are financially strapped. Look, trust me when I say this. If I told you my deal, if you understood my finances, you'd know that I've got to get 6 jobs to survive here. Okay. I need to find a way to make RP somehow or another actually make me money as opposed to just being something I personally donate to. We've got to find a way to fix things because I can't survive. So if I can't survive, I know others are in the same boat. Okay. And so when you have a general strike, that means you've got to have either mutual aid and not just mutual aid, like here's a can of tuna, right? I mean, what if you're out of work for 6 weeks and your house goes into foreclosure and you have nowhere to live? Now what? Fist in the air, right? I mean, we got to plan for this stuff. It's not like the sort of thing that you can just sort of decide, right? Yes, you can to some degree. But you got to realize that there's huge risks, and it's the people that don't have the ability to make that decision for themselves, like the children who have to eat and they don't understand politics. They don't understand geopolitics. They certainly don't understand macroeconomics, and they definitely don't understand why they would be homeless. They don't understand why they wouldn't have a house. Okay. So a general strike is a great idea. But one of the things, I talked to a guy named Joe Burns, and Joe Burns is a labor leader. He's a lawyer, wrote a great book called Class Struggle Unionism. Strongly recommend going out and getting it. It's in our bookstore. If you go to our website, you can find it under our resources and our media. But I want to just say for the record, the average person doesn't have a clue, right? And so in his book, he talks about, and on our podcast, please check out our interviews with him on Macro and Cheese. But he talks about targeted strikes. He talks about targeted strikes. Definitely organizing your workplace is a very important thing. But in terms of strikes, right, the issue isn't whether it's illegal or illegal. The question is it effective? And so what he talked about was targeted strikes. Now, what do you think might be a good targeted strike? Might it be ports, longshoremen? Might it be train operators that carry freight? Definitely. Might it be some other key thing that is literally has long-standing, long impacts? Yes. These are the kinds of things, because the days of Eugene V. Debs, okay, are sadly over. We don't have the industrial makeup of this country. We've turned into a service economy, and most of us telework. The beauty of telework is we get more time with our families. The unsexy part of telework is that people don't get together anymore. And because they don't get together anymore, it's very hard to organize. And the way social media works and all the others work, it's very hard to even come together. And yes, the railroad, faux show. Yes. So if you understand, let's start with what is MMT? Modern monetary theory is, in fact, and here, let me just for shits and grins, put a special virtual background in place. I said that and I can't even find it. So I'm just going to have to say, screw that. I guess I'm staying with my debt background. Anyway, modern monetary theory is a lens that describes the way currency works, in particular, since 1972, when Richard Nixon removed the United States from the Bretton Woods Accord. That was a worldwide gold standard, pseudo gold standard. It was really a dollar standard, where the dollar itself, though, was back to gold. Okay, when they removed us from the Bretton Woods Accord, we became what they call a sovereign, free-floating, meaning the market can trade and the value goes up and down. So sovereign, free-floating, fiat by decree, meaning our government spends it into existence, creates it on command. It used to be when the monarchy would speak it into existence. Now it's Congress and law that speaks it into existence. That's how money comes to be. It's not like they go to a bank and stand in line waiting at the teller. Hey man, you know, I need a couple fat stacks of greenbacks to go ahead and pay for this military industrial complex, man. Are we good for the credit, man? Oh yeah, sure, man. Yeah, you're good. No, it doesn't work that way, right? Government spends the money into existence. Then it sells treasury bonds to offset spending that is not already covered. So the deficit spending is typically covered by bond sales, but bond sales are anachronism. I mean, do you know what anachronism is? Anachronism is something that we used to do that doesn't matter anymore. Kind of like a Tyrannosaurus's arms are vestigial. You know, that's what bond sales are in terms of funding the government. They never did and they don't still, but we have got it in our stupid heads that they do. Well, MMT shows us that bond sales are what they call ex post or after the spending. We're not borrowing money with bonds and spending. We're just spending money into existence. We sell bonds. Why? Because the rich people of the world, who are the ones that hold US bonds or the government that holds its own debt, those people want a guaranteed basic income. And the more we raise interest rates, those folks love life. They win big because those interest rate hikes are good for people that already have money. Anyway, so you have currency issuers, the federal government, sorry, Rothschild lovers and all you creature from Jekyll Isles. You'll have to go to some other channel where they fucking entertain stupid Alex Jones bullshit. This isn't that place. Oh, sorry. You're not going to get to hear the, you know, hey, man, I bribed the Rothschild's butler and I gave him we're going to slip some arsenic in his Earl Grey. And if that doesn't work, we've got a bar of soap we're going to slip into the bathtub when Rothschild steps into the shower. He's going to slip and fall. It'll be over, man. We don't have to worry about Rothschilds. It'll be gone, man. Good to go, right? Fuck that. Anybody that's into that shit, fucking bounce. I ain't got time for that shit, okay? So the bottom line is that if you look federal government spends money into existence. So the federal government is a currency issuer. If you look down at the bottom of the states do not issue currency. The states are what we call currency users. So MMT talks about currency issuers and currency users. It talks about where money comes from, keystrokes. I mean, we've talked about this extensively. Money comes from this. Got some dude sitting there, doesn't know Adam from Adam, and sits there and says, oh, we got to put $10 billion into the Treasury's accounts. $10 billion. Not, hey, roll out the printing press. We got to get ourselves some dollars. We're printing money. None of that shit. Okay? That's not how it works. So, when the federal government spends money, it spends it on something. It doesn't just create money for the hell of it. Yeah, we'll print money and we'll use it later. No. It says, hey, we offered one of these contractors, right? We offered one of these contractors a contract. Lockheed Martin, $39.2 billion, Boeing, $23 billion, whatever. General Dynamics, $16.9 billion. That money goes into the Treasury's account. And the Treasury then spends that money to Lockheed Martin or whatever government contractors all over the world. That's how money starts. That's how it enters into the world. 1 minute it didn't exist, the next minute it did. Your tax dollars. So we watch this. If I had a drawing thing, I could show you, and I want to do this. I actually have a camera that I can draw this stuff, and I'll get it set up sometime soon. But if I just draw this out, here's spending. There's spending right there, right? So you see that? Spending. Here's taxing. And you know where taxing goes? Let me show you where it goes. See that? Goes in the trash can, folks. It's deleted. That's the money right there. When you tax, it's trash. We don't print money. We spend it into existence via keystrokes. There's only enough printed money to affect teller transactions and ATM requests. They don't print money, period. Money comes in several different forms, electronic, whatever. Okay? So MMT describes the plumbing of the economic system. It gets rid of all the Alex Jones shit. God, I think that might be the thing I love the most, is it trashes and destroys the stupidest things that we have to hear about. Rothschilds. The Rothschilds. Right? So MMT describes money creation. It really describes aggregate demand, describes monetary operations, not just in the U.S., but it describes currency wherever it is. In other words, some idiot has said, well, it only works in the U.S. because the U.S. is the world's reserve currency. Wrong. Wrong answer. Wrong. Not true. It works in Japan. It works in Australia. It works in China. It works in Russia. It works in Canada. It works in the U.K. Even the EU, which is not a currency issuer as it stands, but the European Bank, the ECB, is the currency issue because they've kind of got a regional setup. And in that space, each country, like Greece, which so many people, you'll be bankrupt like Greece. No, Greece is not a currency issuer. They gave up the drachma. They now are on the euro. That is the god by ECB. Okay. So you could think of Europe as the United States states, kind of like what this whole talk is about. Okay, the currency issuer is the European Central Bank. The currency users are the countries, Germany, Greece, France, Spain, these folks, right? So if that's the deal, you know that your taxes do not fund federal spending. No matter how many people weep, no matter how many idiots tell you, crack an economic textbook, right? I have an MBA. I have a Master of Science. And 3 seminars into a PhD. I learned all kinds of classical econ. I've cracked many textbooks. From Milton Friedman to Adam Smith to Keynes and Hayek and everywhere in between. I had to unlearn all that so I could really learn how it worked. And I used to be a libertarian. So everything I say is coming from where I once stood. I used to be a Republican. So all the shit talk is coming from a guy who once knew it and did it and now undid it. So when I'm telling you about this stuff, imagine my surprise that Democrats resist it almost more than Republicans. Trey bizarre, huh? Trey bizarre. They're still so hell-bent that they need to raise taxes to pay for things that they can't get out of their own way. And so because of that, they don't understand the difference between the federal government, which is the currency issuer, and the only way it issues currency is to spend it on something, which means it would need to be a federal bill like Medicare for All. Instead, they want to talk about doing it at the state level, where I've already demonstrated in spades that the states can't handle this shit because they're currency users and because they're in a war to the death with each other to steal business away from each other. And in the cases where they're unsuccessful at stealing businesses from each other, they instead decide to raise money through fracking because, after all, fracking is sustainable because it ain't going away. See, whatever you tax, you legitimize. If you want to fund a program by taxing the rich, now this doesn't work anyway because, let's be fair, at the federal level, it doesn't matter because the rich don't have anything to do with it. We can make them irrelevant by spending directly. It matters at the state level, though, because what you tax and you depend on for funding, if it goes away, it's gone, right? So if you think a federal bill has to be taxed by taxing the billionaire class, definitely tax them. I'm not saying don't tax them. Tax the fuck out of them. But they don't pay for a cent of that program. Not a penny. Now, the word is that it makes fiscal space, whatever that means, because in the end, it's really about what is available in real resources, meaning labor, meaning production, etc. Well, the United States has become a service economy. We don't produce a lot of anything anymore. So we're highly vulnerable, which is why we're at war, proxy anyway, with Ukraine, because we want to beat Russia into submission, because Russia and China are kicking our ass when it comes to development. China in particular, with their One Belt, One Road initiative, turned into their Many Belts, Many Roads edition, okay? And they are really, really a threat to the elite neoliberal oligarchs. And you're seeing a balkanization of the neoliberal world through NATO and the non-neoliberal world, non-NATO. And I don't give a shit about Vladimir Putin. He's an asshole, just like everybody else is an asshole. I'm telling you the economics. If you don't like that, go talk to somebody else. They'll tell you about Alex Jones. Go learn about the Rothschilds. Be all you can be. But if you want the real scoop, I'm telling you. So why does it matter? Because a lack of understanding of economics, our very good people that are fighting for children to have good education are busy funding it with fracking because it ain't going anywhere. So they now need fracking to stay in place to fund these state-based programs. Think about that. Believe me, I drink tears of haters. People that don't like me, that think I'm mean because I punched at the state-by-staters. I drink your tears. I don't care. Because I'm not trying to hurt you. I'm trying to help us all. Because they're not talking about this shit. None of them are. And that's shameful. It's embarrassing. And it's unacceptable on every single level. If you don't know economics, and you have things to say, instead, why don't you take the sock out of your ears and put it in your mouth and listen then? Because the problem is we're creating these programs, now these kids, to give them the goods and services they need, to give them the education they need. They're going to fund it. They're going to fund it through fracking. Well played, folks. Well played. There's good questions in here. I don't have time to answer them, guys. I am so sorry. It's 12:59. I got to get back to work. But trust me when I say this. Come back Friday. We'll hit it again, man. Bring your questions. Maybe we'll do an Ask Me Anything on Friday. Maybe that's what I'll do. Friday is going to be Ask Me Anything. I'll take questions from the the chat, and we can talk through MMT and whatever other questions you have. In the meantime, folks, I have to tell you, Grumbine is...
If you enjoyed this podcast and would like to support our efforts, please take a moment to subscribe and check out our other work on the Real Progress in Action YouTube channel and visit our sister organization's website at realprogressives.org.